All right, and we're live. Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Moss Radio on mossradio.com. We are your local online community radio, prioritizing and practicing engagement with each other, listeners, participants, and communities. Moss Radio streams at select hours, changing every week, and you can find our programming and exact hours on the schedule page of our website. Feel free to contact us through email at mossradio@proton.me. Again, that's mossradio@proton.me or on mossradio.nyc on Instagram. And you can text us at 917-809-4084 or chat on the website. So please share any thoughts that you have. You are listening to In Conversation with Black Bunny Burrow, and I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hello. I'm a member of the Black Bunny Burrow. I don't know how much details you want me to say just yet, but
there you go. Yeah. And my name is DJ Croak. And yeah, today we're going to be talking about Black Bunny Burrow and the work that the group is doing as a community hub. So yeah, I'm going to let you kind of ramble for a sec, and I'm going to face you.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm going to let you ramble for a bit about what you do and.
Okay, so the Black Bunny Burrow started as a last-minute collective project after many years of burnout and getting, like, a reparations grant after enduring, like, anti-blackness through a old job and not knowing what to do with so much money and not wanting to have it in my hands. So we, like, rushed and got together, me and some other like Bronx queer trans black and brown folks, and decided to make a space that doesn't really exist right now per se. Like, a lot of queer spaces are always like either white run or and or cis. There's never that intersection of like Black and brown trans folks serving Black and brown trans folks, especially if like poor backgrounds, and in particular in the health and care spectrum. So right now I'm personally practicing as a doula. I'm a full spectrum doula, studying to be a lactation doula, educator, and I just wanted to give community the same access of health care and just care in general that I had during my recovery last year, and my preparation prior to that to deciding if surgery was the right choice for me, what surgeries were the right choices for me. It's like, technically we do this already in indigenous communities, like taking care of each other, especially like as Black and brown folks, but there's like not a real title per se. And sadly we live in a capitalist world where monetization and commodification of it is important in order for us to have visibility and access to healthcare through insurances and whatever. So decided to just like put a little bit of a label there, of like trans dualism. I'm pretty sure that there's a bunch of people that do it. I'm not the first nor the last, thankfully. But yeah, we just wanted the space to be, long story short, I got money. I looked for places to have this collective center, IRL. We couldn't find a place in the Bronx, which is where we wanted to be, because we're from uptown. And we really don't have, until recently, like Callan Lord opened there, but we don't really have a lot of queer health care. And so we found this place in Sunset Park, and we were able to open there for the last few months. And the goal was to have it just available and accessible to folks to want to either teach, provide care through any other means to the community. But because of the location, it was just inaccessible, even though it was very ADA accessible. And therefore, we're closing soon. So if anybody has like any leads of uptown spaces that are ADA accessible and like affordable and don't require an arm and a leg or are owned by Zionist, that'll be fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. Please reach out. Where can they reach out?
They can find us in Black Bunny Borough on Instagram and also at blackbunnyborough.com. Just reach out to us and any suggestions, any particular offerings. We are looking also for like collective members that are Black and brown, trans folks, ideally, but also like in the LGBTQIA plus spectrum. And mainly anything that's around care. So like mental health, physical health, emotional, like everything that is caretaking, like surgery prep, therapy,
Pilates, yoga. If you could do a kind of like a brief list of like services that y'all were providing.
Yeah, so the initial goal was to offer scar treatments. Because I have an esthetician and this esthetician is also a Black and brown trans person from the Bronx. And she was doing scar treatments on me. I had her as a facialist before. And we became friends over the years. So in the East Coast, we don't really have that. There's a very amazing person that does it in the West Coast, but nobody has access to travel like that. So we were trying to have her, because also she has a different approach, be able to provide that care to people for a free or sliding scale. And then give access to my services, which is like helping folks find surgeons, if surgery is the right purpose for them, which surgery, where to go, what would they need, what finances, how insurance works, things like that. And then we also have a bunch of like fitness equipment. So if we initially wanted to collaborate with Black and brown trans gyms to offer free classes to the community in order to prepare for surgery mainly, and also to recover. I think that we don't talk a lot about how like the journey to physically, not physically, but surgically transitioning, it's a more expansive one than we think, in a non-scary way. Like it's not just like, oh, I just get surgery and call it a day. It's a whole healing process, emotionally, mentally, physically, that requires a lot of community, requires a lot of hands, and not everybody has access to that. So, and right now we're offering, like, we're collecting medicinal herbs and veggies from Black and brown trans collectives that are farmers. And we're hoping to redistribute some medicine in the next few months that we've been working on making to people healing or preparing to endure like a surgery or even non-surgical transition support.
Wow. That's amazing. I didn't realize that there were few people doing that. The scar...
Yeah, there's not a lot.
Because I was actually talking... for the harm reduction podcast this morning to somebody who does it in North Carolina, who's like a facial.
That's amazing.
And I think who is learning from that person on the West Coast, if it's the less.
Yes. It's like the only one. Cause like, for example, I have scar aversion. Like before my surgery, I will throw up or I will faint if I looked at scars. And, I was very scared to endure that process, and it got to the point where like my dysphoria outweighed my fear. And you know, I didn't have representation anywhere I went. It was either like a very binary trans mass person that was black and didn't care about their scars and like had keloids, and you know, that's their journey and that's totally fine, but it wasn't for me. Like, that scared me. And I wanted to find melanated folks who were different sizes, that I could see myself reflected, and wanted also like the type of surgery that I did, because initially I wanted a reduction, a gender affirming reduction, which was more of like a GNC. We were my surgeon was starting to like put a name to it, because a lot of people had that resurgence of like, hey, I don't really want a mass chest per se, but I don't see that anywhere, you know. So initially that was gonna be my journey, but then when they were like, oh, actually we can't promise that your sensation is gonna come back or whatever, me being very like scar and surgery averted was like, okay, let's just go for the full mastectomy. And I'm still processing that, and I'm a year in. I think that I don't regret it. Like, generally people say like, you don't remember your body before surgery.
Yeah.
But it is true. Like, I don't remember it. But at the same time, it's like ups and downs, you know, like you get affirmation of your body in one way, but then you also grieve. And I don't think that there's a lot of people, especially in like your field as well, like that are equipped to deal with the grief and preparation and after surgery for our communities, or like culturally competent.
Because
that's also like the base of our collective, is just like culturally competent care by and for Black and Brown trans people. Yeah, initially we were going to get like a giant grant, like super big, where we could actually open a clinic.
Wow.
But that didn't happen because the system.
Yeah.
But that's like a goal at the end of the day, just like having a physical location where it's not just local to the Bronx or just local to New York, and not even like have it be from us per se. Like, we're not, we're not doing this for like cloud or any personal gain. Like, it's a very horizontal structure. So like anyone that comes and like takes over, as long as they're doing the work and it's ethical and sustainable for everybody, that's
come to it,
come through.
So how big would you say like your team is right now?
We started as four.
Okay.
But because of life, like evictions, illegal evictions, health crisis, family crisis, it's just me dealing the forefront right now. But I don't want it to be that. So if anybody wants to join and it's meeting the requirements of being a Black and Brown trans person that's queer, or just like a cis person that's queer, and Black and Brown, ideally native to the New York area, but if not, just like definitely has to be of non-affluent background. But then again, we can nitpick.
Yeah. We can negotiate.
Like, yeah, we can negotiate, as long as like somebody is like horizontal, anarcho, and I mean, those labels I don't like to put, because people, especially of our backgrounds, don't necessarily identify with like systemically systemic labeling, like an anarcho. Like, some people are like, oh no, I'm not an anarcho, I'm a socialist. And I'm like, you still do the same shit, you know? So as long as like we practice indigenous sovereignty in all spectrums and decolonial mindset, that's
It's about how somebody's treating the work and engaging with the people.
Exactly. Like, if there's like a cishet that is like guilty and wants to give money, come my way. There's a cishet that wants to like provide services for free, come my way. But also they will have to go through like a lot of vetting and a lot of like training to make sure they're culturally adequate to take care of us, because we endure a lot of harm in the medical system already, and just like in the system. So I wouldn't feel comfortable referring someone to a person that is not.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I guess, have you done some of this like cultural competency training for other people?
Yeah. Before? So a little bit of like my background without going too deep into it. I've been organizing basically all of my life, but I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
My dad radicalized me about Cuba when I was like 5. And he will tell me his stories about living through communist times and a dictatorship. But I, over the last 10 years almost, I've been a key part. I hate to say like vertical structure names, but like it was very horizontal, but I ended up in a position of power.
Yeah.
Or like carrying a lot of the weight of a lot of collectives in the city that most people know.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that was me being part of a collective or just being a supportive member, a lot of the language that we use nowadays, a lot of the ways that we distribute wealth and also access, were part of collectives that I was part of or like helped build, which have eventually collapsed over lack of ethics or alliance with the system, things like that. Like, we're all capable of creating harm, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and sometimes we've been talking about this sometimes on these shows of like, in movement spaces especially, there's sometimes a lack of knowledge of how to do accountability processes and repair harm, and like maintain something that can still help people and be for people despite like maybe like one incident. But then also like if it really is a group that is causing like harm in and of itself, you know, then like, yeah, it's so many situations, but I feel like I've definitely seen that in movement spaces of like so many groups just like collapsing really quickly after like one incident of harm.
Oh yeah, and in my case, there's been so many incidents of harm, and it's more of like, oh, not that they don't have the tools to do like decolonial accountability processes and like hold community in itself. It's more like egos, powered structures. I think that social, financial, any type of power is really dangerous. And I guess like I'm somebody that is one of a few that gets really repelled by the idea of having power. So I am very aware every time that I do. I am very vocal. I'm always like the one calling things out, and not everybody likes that.
Mm-hmm.
So for a while, I was just like out of organizing structures, and I went back to do that after COVID started. And I did actually that. I did like the
cultural
competency, ADA accessibility, harm reduction, counseling, and stuff like that for an event. Like a big event. And during this event, there was like a major anti-blackness situation and also like a turfy thing that happened internally and externally of the collective, that therefore leading to the people that we were serving, they endured harm. And I spoke up for those people to be compensated. And that led to another like very problematic situation, and I'm not somebody who just backs down. So I was like, you're being funded by these people at this people, you're funding this, have this accountability. Because I think also people who just give out money without like sustaining or checking in with the people that are working for the folks that they fund is very dangerous to me. And I think that white people get really excited about giving out shit for their own guilt. but not really, because of, we also don't want them in our spaces, but there's a way of like not being in control mm-hmm. while still
giving something to those,
making sure that you set certain steps to make sure that whoever you're serving can come back to you and knows who you are mm-hmm. in order to report anything that's unethical or like yeah. unsustainable before it crashes out. And that's what happened. So I fucked around. I like cursed out this whitey and she was like, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. What can we do? And for years she was like, oh, if you have like anything, let me know. We'll fund it. And I was like, nah. And after getting tired of hearing it and like building trust with her, I was like, okay, I guess we can redistribute this wealth. Mm-hmm. But I'm an impulsive person and I went for the most expensive, but yet fastest accessibility space. So we ran out of it very fast. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, I think there's definitely an impulse there always of wanting to find something that's like going to be really cool for people and going to work really well and give good services. So at least you've made it happen.
Yeah. I mean, we're just going to be remote for a little bit. Yeah. But right now we're getting a lot of potential leads to Bronx spaces, which is where we want to awesome. Be.
Nice. So. Yeah. And I guess, what is the framework of like community care that y'all are working around?
Definitely peer-to-peer, again, horizontal, decolonial, centering indigenous practices, centering lived experiences mm-hmm. as much as possible. Not having a set hard structure per se, because like I said, like when I'm just a part, a very small part of like something that could be something else, and it all becomes and changes according to who
has it in the moment.
Yeah. So just like having to be open, like I am someone who loves collaboration, I love being in community with people, just like being held, that's like the overall motto, I guess.
Yeah.
As long as you feel held by your people, in a way that you know, like, oh yeah, I could go to the XYZ and like find community there that's gonna align with my views or like give me resources to like sustain my instability right now. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, yeah. Have you encountered a lot of like, I guess I'm thinking about like obstructions and getting funding from like medical realms, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised because I really thought my little ass was like, oh yeah, we're just gonna get funding, like we got this big funding, we have like a good project that's like relevant to the times and like the needs, because like with everything happening we're losing all access to care. Mm-hmm. So whether that's through food, whether that's through healthcare, whether that's through housing. And yeah, I've been like exposed to a bunch of grants that we qualified for, because we're not a legal institution, but we do have a fiscal sponsor as of like 2 months ago. And they were like major like medical grants.
Yeah.
Like that were almost like $500,000 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we got denied for a bunch of them because I guess we weren't big enough, or we're just like an idea per se. That's all I can think of.
Do you think there's any, like, do you think it's at all impacted by the current cuts to like programs?
Oh yeah, we qualified for like this amazing grant that was like a state grant. And we didn't have to do systemic ties to it per se, because you know sometimes grants come with like, oh, you have to do a report back every 5 seconds about it, and like half a bunch of people's hands in it that are not part of your collective. But this grant was very like flexible as a state grant. But the moment that we found out about it, the week after the program got cut, it was related to COVID.
Oh God.
Cause like we were gonna, part of our space is giving out like COVID tests, masks. We're not medical providers, but just doing the community work. And it was
thank you for the masks, by the way.
You're welcome. If you need more, just let us know. We have a bunch of tests.
And the tests, yes.
Yeah, what was it called? Yeah, the requirement for that one was just to be a care structure of any kind that does outreach for COVID.
Oh, wow.
In New York City. And you were going to get 500,000 or something like that.
Whoa.
Yeah. But then they closed it the next week.
Okay. Yeah.
I was like, fucking A.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Given what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been looking at a lot of the harm reduction programs also getting cut.
Yeah. A bunch of them did.
Yes. Which is great going into that. But also, I don't know. Sorry, I'm trying to put together a thought, but I guess I'm just thinking about how there are very few hubs that are providing that type of medical care, and also I don't know, just body work also, that are that affordable and accessible. Because I know there's St. Anne's Corner of Harm Reduction.
The one in the city here?
I think it's uptown.
Yeah, but in Manhattan, right?
Yeah, maybe. No. I thought it was the Bronx.
Really?
Yeah.
St. Anne's.
Let me look it up because I don't want to be wrong. St. Anne's Corner. Okay. Yeah, Bronx.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think they actually do acupuncture as well.
Yeah, there's this great collective called New York City POC Healing Circle.
Yes, I just did put one of their events on our dispatch.
They're also from the Bronx, some of them, and pretty dope homies. And the Cypher, which is another Bronx collective, who is related to them too. They do all of that too.
Well, even this though is very much more of a, that's a bigger, institutional.
No, that's it. I see they have
that's
an establishment.
It's a thing. Yeah. But they are cool people. I've met a few of them, but definitely not the same type of community based, it's definitely not the most queer focused as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
always a limitation.
Yeah. It's never fully at the intersection.
Yeah.
But yes, but I don't know, I'm thinking that, and I know that there's not many of those, and even I think about harm reduction groups in the city, that's why I started the NYC harm reduction home group, because there were only maybe two or three harm reduction groups in the city that people could go to, and even then I think it's so hard to
that.
Of course, I think it's so hard to get the word out.
Yeah, that's the worst part, because I think through my years, what I've noticed is that people really let egos in, and the word is not that it doesn't get out, is that it splits. Instead of us coming together as a community, oh, you can do that, I can do this, we're technically in the same field of care. It's all for the same community, but we're having to have. You have to have your shit, and I need to have mine.
For sure.
And because it subdivides so many ways that they don't need to, there's always one or two that people know, and then that's it. Nobody else it branches outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that hinders us, in my perception. Yeah.
And I think also it's a lot of the stuff that's peer run, I guess.
It's also white.
I was going to go with a lot of stuff that's peer run is either that or just not getting any opportunities because people don't want to see peer run.
Oh, things, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, yeah.
Because yeah, like, who wants to be the one to have all these drug users in this space? You know, like, it's ridiculous stuff, but...
Which is wild, because people do discriminate a lot against houseless folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who consume drugs.
Yeah.
Or are just not straight-laced in society.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, it's... You said you also do harm reduction work, or have done harm reduction work. Is that also something you were bringing to Black Bunny Borough?
Yeah, I've done it in the past many years during the times that I was with my mm-hmm. personal collectives. Like, I've done food shares, I've done Narcan distribution, I've gone through borders and distributed. Yeah. Essential life-saving supplies and done teach-ins and things like that. But I don't want to be the only one wearing a hat, per se, because, again, I don't want that structure. So right now, for me and my own service that I am offering, it's more harm reduction through the lens of finding accessible care mm-hmm. for your gender affirmation.
Which is a huge part of it, too. Yeah. No, it's good. I feel like, have you had, like, how has been, like, how, what type of exposure have you had in terms of, were a lot of people able to hear about the physical space when you had it open?
I reach out to a bunch of community that I did a bunch of research on, because, again, like, if it's already being done, why not collab? Mm-hmm. Why not join my skills there and not have to start something anew? Yeah. But everybody had their own, like, either somewhere more in the business lens mm. and wanting to focus on that. Others were just in another place in their life. Mm-hmm. Others were busy. So, and then the ones that I knew that could, like, be present right away were people that I don't talk to because of problematic, mm-hmm. like, power structures and dynamics, and also abuse in our collectives, because mm-hmm. also, like, your identity does not protect you from being an abuser. Mm-hmm. And just not wanting to be a nonprofit.
Yeah.
So just,
it's hard to get grants without being a nonprofit. I've learned this radio.
It's very hard, but also when you are very vocal like me and you're hated by a bunch of people, you get to call out all the whites for their guilt. Yes. And then they connect you to the whites with guilt that want to redistribute.
Guilt, yeah, and money.
Without being in your business. Yeah. So if you need, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think because it's always hard to toe the line of, like, where, like, literally, like, where are you getting the money from? And at the same time, like, can you use that for services? You know, like, can you use, like, why not take the money?
Yeah.
It's always the dilemma, I fear.
It's such a thing with, like, money, because it can be so easily skewed in either direction. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I don't want a funder who is in my business and doesn't care about my well-being first.
Yeah.
Because, like, there's organizers or people doing work who do not center themselves. That's like, the nature of us. Mm-hmm. Like, we could be houseless or struggling, and we're like, let's go redistribute things, you know? So when you have people who have access to a bunch of shit, and they're just like, oh, no, you can't use transparently, because I'm not saying take fucking money from... Mm-hmm. the pot, like, I had to learn that for many years. I was like, it's so unethical to take money. I did not mm-hmm. get paid for my work. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And I've been houseless during the struggles, and I've gone through a bunch of shit. And until that guilty white was like, hey, so this is not sustainable for you. Uh-huh. Like, I'm going to give you this grant, but also, like, how can I help you in some way to, like, either find a job or find housing? Like, it doesn't have to be monetary exchanges, but just, like, taking care, that's something that is very hard for me to this day, especially doing like doula work, taking care of myself first, mm-hmm. in a way that's not self-centered or delays care to others. Because for me, like, that's my biggest, like, yeah. no-no.
What are the ways in which you do that?
I'm learning that I'm not okay with, like, putting things in the back burner. Like, mm-hmm. putting, like, for example, if you're having an emergency, I can't be like, oh, no, like, you need to chill. I need to take care of myself first fully and then take care of you.
Yeah.
But also there's, like, a little awareness that came with age and, like, lift experiences of, like, when I'm really at, like, if my tank is maybe, like, an 80% full, I need to step back before yeah. I burn out and, like, not perform fully or not be present in a way that can be impactful to others.
Yeah.
Because then that endangers people.
Yeah, especially whenever you're working directly with individuals.
Yeah.
If you're not taking care of how you're feeling, it's so easy to transfer that over to somebody else, or like to transfer the bad, no, yeah. you know, vibes, and yeah, just not be in the right headspace to be able to support somebody who's either going through crisis or just needs help in general.
Yeah, so just having community that I could be like, hey, I'm not able to do this right now, but can you? Just like being able to do referrals, mm-hmm. the peer-to-peer referral exchange is, I guess, my sustainability right now.
Yeah. Have you found that easy to do with the have you found it easy to build that type of community in the city?
It is easy, but we're all burned out, and yeah. that's like the difficult part for me, because I feel like I can compartmentalize much easier than a lot of my peers. And even in, for transparency, even in our own collective, the person who I started it with was my best friend. Mm-hmm. And right now we're like in a little bit of a friend break, mm-hmm. but it's mostly because they're overwhelmed by life, getting kicked out of their apartment, ta-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, oh, but we have this grant, you know? And sometimes you say things that are like untimely.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to take a step back. For me, I'm like, any emergency but my own comes first.
Right.
And at the same time, I understand it when other people don't. Like, I advocate for them to not do that. But when it's like really, really personal, like for me coming back to organizing, I think that I have less tolerance mm-hmm. for it. And that's something that I'm becoming more aware of.
Yeah, like knowing when to take a step back, yeah. and I don't know, I think it's definitely been interesting in certain spaces. Like, even with this radio, I've been navigating, you know, when are the moments where you have enough capacity that, like, you can take on the work that other people can't right now, versus, like, yo, I just really gotta have somebody help me out.
And
I
think, just stopping.
Yeah, or just stopping.
And which is so hard.
Yeah. Yeah, and even, like, every week I'm, like, scrambling to, like, make content and do all these things. And I've felt this, like, you know, I've also watched, like, 2 seasons of Blindspot while this has been happening. Because I've been, like, reverting back to just, like, rotting on my couch. Because every time I, like, think about all this work, it's so overwhelming.
Yes.
I
watch so much Love is Blind as, like, my sport.
Mm-hmm.
Because his head's being trashy is like what gives
hilarious.
Me life as a way to like raw too, because it's just so overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so, but then at the same time I think sometimes I'm just like sitting here like, yeah, you know, I right now have a lot of like time on my hands, and a lot of people don't have time on their hands, mm-hmm. and access to a lot of like resources that people don't, and so it's like, what can I be doing to,
you're me.
Yeah, you know, it's like the constant dilemma of like, I'm what sitting
do
here.
I do?
Yeah, what do I do? And I'm sitting here, and like every hour that I'm sitting here is like, I could have been doing something.
Yeah, your resources could be helping someone else.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it's also like, well, I need to have something. Like some time to myself.
Sleep?
You know, exactly. Like sleep, food, you know, like, I don't know. It's very, easy sometimes. Like, I think, I don't know, I don't want to say like when I'm in social work, because I feel like, I, as we were talking about earlier, so many social workers just like do not give a flying fuck.
Try finding a therapist in the city, right?
Yeah.
But that takes insurance.
Yeah, definitely.
That takes Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not problematic.
Like
not,
yeah, exactly. And that isn't going to like treat minorities like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, but as in general, I think in care work, I guess, let's say, like, it's a constant, yeah, negotiation of, especially now, like, as care systems are breaking down, how can we, like, use the skills that we've built because we're trained to do this, to then, like, be able to help the community, and at the same time, like, oh, everything's breaking down, and, like,
yeah,
that means also for us, like, where are the jobs gonna be, you know, like, how can we, like, financially support ourselves, like, to do this work also?
Well, you'll be surprised, there's a lot of money out there, but people, what I've noticed is that unless people get some sort of gain, whether that's like social clout, guilt off their shoulders, mm-hmm, visibility that they are giving something, they hoard it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with people that have the access.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, why do we have to make a party for you in order for you to donate to our fundraiser?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, why can't you just donate?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it? Why does it have to be an exchange? Because that was also like what I did mostly in my organizing days.
Like organizing fundraising stuff?
Yes. I like fundraised for a bunch of people. And personally, like, redistributed goods and money to folks while being, like, struggling to live or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not taking a dime. But, yeah, it takes a toll. And I feel like, I'm like, okay, I was privileged enough to, like, have a sweet talk,
mm-hmm,
and get venues for free because of a cause or a sliding scale and not have to pay that much money. But I'm like, why do I have to go this extra mile, like, getting food, buying supplies in order for you to come here for like an hour, like,
right,
give me $25. Why can't you just give me the money?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you have to prove to these people that you want it enough, and you're, like, enough in these identities that you're going to be, like,
you're
using
it.
Yeah, what?
You're a token.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tokenize your identities in order to get anything.
Yeah. I'm doing a thumbs up for anybody. No, but I think it's true, and I think it's like, this almost, like, horse... Is it what they call it? Like, a horseshoe thing?
Uh-huh.
Where it's, like, if you don't say anything, then, like, you know, if, like, you're, like, fully, like, white, cis, het, whatever, then you get all the money.
Yeah.
And then, basically, like, and then either that or they ask you to be, like, the most, you, like, the same way that, like, you can't have more than $2,000 in your account.
In order to be credible.
Yeah, you know what I mean? To be,
and
like,
I
disabled.
Struggle with that myself.
It's, like, you know, what are you supposed to do then? Like, just not have any, well, and like anywhere in the middle, basically, you're just,
no,
our bad, we, yeah, can't really do anything.
Yeah, it's very difficult, and I think that that's also why we wanted to do it in the Bronx, because I think that the experience of Bronxites, it's one that not everyone can relate. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we're right there over the bridge, but, you know, we grew up very sheltered from the other state, the other boroughs, and also, we live with our glass half full all the time, mm-hmm, even if it's empty. And I think that that's something that I think a lot,
wait,
of...
What do you mean by that?
Like, there's a lot of hope. Like, mm-hmm, we live on scraps and we're like, wow, I'm so rich. Yeah. Like, I don't need anything else. I got food. I got a place to live. I have friends. I have family. That's what it is. But I've noticed that other people, mainly non-immigrant folks,
mm-hmm,
and definitely non-poor folks, live with the scarcity mentality,
Like, I'm always
struggling. I'm always hustling. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, I'm like, yo, you have 10K in your bank account. Like, yeah. Rich, you know? Yeah. And we are repelled by people that don't really see that. Like, mm-hmm. I think that, I don't know how to explain it. Like, the part of, like, cultural competent care is a part of understanding the lived experience of the folks that you're catering to. Yeah. In the Bronx, especially in caretaking, especially in healthcare, is either somebody who's extremely affluent and has no connection to the community, just comes to get their internships and leaves, or it's someone who just is too real, too relatable, and they don't have the resources because they're like, oh, this is what we have. Yeah. So as somebody who sort of have been privileged enough to branch out and have resources, I feel like it's a sort of my duty to like give back. Not even give back, because I hate that that term low-key, but like Skillshare.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish that other people can come and like sweep me up the same way that I can sweep up other people. Like, it's not even like, oh, I know better than anyone, or I don't have a superiority complex like a lot of providers of care do. I don't want to institutionalize anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be institutionalized myself. There's ways to finagle the system. There's ways to like work your privileges in your community's benefit without centering yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's still a medium I'm trying to really break through, because even though I myself have successfully done that, I think that collectives really get tired and crack under pressure, mm-hmm. and let that mentality seep in.
The scarcity mentality.
Yeah, the scarcity mentality, the power struggle, the egos. Like, I don't need to know who you are in order to receive care from you. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, you're there. Cool. Yeah. Thank you so much. What can I do to exchange this?
Mutual education and learning and...
Yeah. Like...
Tools.
Intergenerational stuff. Like, we silence elders a lot, and we silence children a lot. We think that they're either dumb or just not as important in conversation,
mm-hmm.
to lived experiences. So wanting to foster an intergenerational space as well is definitely key for us.
Yeah, I definitely. We've been talking also on this other show last week about cross movement stuff and just the need and or like how that is the answer to so much of this,
mm-hmm.
and being able to like, yeah, be like, we all have these like 50 to 300 people groups of people that honestly all overlap in a lot of different manners and believe in a lot of the same stuff, but then have this like one different, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
obviously some of the stuff is like actual ethical issues that like, you know, you're not going to collaborate with somebody. But then if it's just like identity politics,
yeah,
in that case, it's just like, yo, like we all out here trying to do this work. And a lot of times it is just like, oh, this group is really young or old, or mm-hmm. They're like, it's a lot of these people. You know what I mean?
And oh, they're just started, and like, who are these? Or they're pigs, or they're mm-hmm. like infiltrators. Like, not everyone is a spy. Like, I would love for like there to be, no, I wouldn't love that. I'm being sarcastic. But if we all were spies, that would be dope, because that would mean that people have time and energy. But like in such a divided movement, I'm like, who has the time to infiltrate every single minuscule yeah. group?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that a lot of, especially young, not young in age, but like brand new collectives yeah. get broken down because of that fear. And I'm not saying don't be hypervigilant, mm-hmm. because security culture is extremely important, but also understand that sometimes you're the person that you have to be vigilant of is at least one that you expect, who's mm-hmm. like raping a young person or using power dynamics to take advantage of people. Mm-hmm. So especially when it comes to intergenerational stuff, like I've been in intergenerational groups most of my organizing time, and I've seen it from elders that I respect, like abusing power, mm-hmm. and I don't want to be that elder.
Right.
And I don't want to be in community with those elders. But there's a space for restorative justice for people to like hold them accountable and like reinstate them into community. But mm-hmm. that's not for me.
Mm.
I've learned that that's not my role right now. Like I could do so much and like
not have to be in those spaces and not put yourself in that position.
I mean, I've held so many people accountable, yeah. including myself, that I believe that everybody plays a part into dynamics of harm. Mm. So like, even though I've personally, as far as I know, have not created harm mm-hmm. directly, I've been in community with people who have, and I feel like that's a responsibility I have to take. And the fact that people don't function that way, it's scary. Because one, you're not holding your people accountable.
And your community says everything about who you are, how you care, how you function.
Exactly. And it's all because of fear of like the state infiltrating, or it's all because of fear of losing power. And I'd rather not have a collective mm-hmm. than have one where there's abuse or mm-hmm. there's power structures that come to play.
For sure. How have you navigated like not having power structures in your collective?
In this one?
Yeah.
In this one, I mean, it's hard because right now I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm.
But just trying my best to like have people input as much as possible. It just happened that this collective sort of came to fruition during a time that it was difficult for a lot of the mm-hmm. members that and it started with this, because you know, some people got illegally evicted, other people have like family with like major health issues mm-hmm. and they can't really be present.
For sure.
So right now it's just mainly mm-hmm. my voice. So there is a dynamic of power there because it's only me right now. But
that's how I feel.
I know.
Like talking on this radio, like 10 hours a day, it feels.
Yeah, you were telling me how you don't want people to get tired of your voice. But I don't want to like hoard this
mm-hmm.
access. Like even if it's remote, like right now, I'm going to be off physically for a while because of health stuff. But I just want to do the trans dualism,
mm-hmm.
whether that's like remote or in person right now, that's what I can do. And then just bring people in. I also like commit myself to being the person like getting funds
mm-hmm.
and just giving it out. Like, for example, if you want to be part of the collective and you're like, hey, I am like a peer-to-peer counselor and like da 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 da, mm-hmm. like say no more. I got the right grant for you. Let me talk to this guilty white over mm-hmm. here. Let's find a space. Let's find community to do this. And like, it's not really that hard. Like, for example, we're not going to have a physical space for a while, but finding community gardens in the Bronx and building that community, finding that we can give out COVID tests through like CSA distributions, and doing like, my goal right now is to do door-to-door knocking in the Bronx and give out COVID tests.
Nice.
But it's only me.
Yeah.
So I'm like, my little feet.
Well, if anybody wants to help with that.
Yeah, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Especially because I'm not going to be able to move a lot mm-hmm. for a few months. But that will decrease, especially the surges of COVID that's happening right now. So like the Bronx, we don't have a lot of access to care, period.
Yeah.
Like people see me with a mask. Like I just came from a doctor's appointment at fucking NYU, and the doctor's like, oh, I can't hear you because of your mask. Make it make sense.
Right.
Like I get it. I speak low, mm-hmm. but also like maybe come closer, maybe tell me to speak louder, but don't say that it's because of my mask. Because I take off my mask and you're still not going to be able to hear me.
Right.
You know?
And also, you're just, you don't want the mask. You know what I mean? Like, this person just doesn't want the mask to see.
Yeah, I'm like, why don't you wear a mask? Maybe I won't wear a mask because you have one. Mm-hmm. And in the Bronx, people don't even know what a test is. They're like, why are you testing?
Yeah.
Like, I had the person who delivered the COVID test to us ask me why I was wearing a mask.
That's funny.
And then asking me, what is that about the COVID test?
Mm.
So it is very, and that's his living. Like, he just delivers this every day to a bunch of people. But he didn't know what a COVID test was.
Mm-hmm. Well, because there's not a lot of, like, I don't know, spaces for that type of education, maybe. Or, like, just care, as you said, access to care.
I mean, I think also for, like, communities that are oppressed, it's like a survival thing where, like, we don't want to be visible more than we already are by wearing a mask or, like, being COVID conscious, because it is a risk. Especially for, like, the East Asian community who is, like, blamed, quote unquote, for the COVID surge. And then if you're Black, you stand out already. So if you're wearing a mask and you're COVID conscious, you stand out even more. And then you have just the inconvenience of it all and the expense of it.
Of course.
Because it's so expensive.
So expensive now.
It's so expensive. Like, we don't even have the trucks anymore that used to do the testing with insurance. So, you know,
you have to, like, tell them, you have to, like, almost, like, fake symptoms these days to, like, get in a PCR test.
Not even. I went to fucking, I don't know if I can curse
you. Yeah, you can.
I went to CityMD maybe 4 months ago to just get my regular PCR, because it's, like, the only place giving it out right now. Tell me how I had to get a doctor to sign a paper and ask me 50 times if it was something I consented to getting in order to get a PCR.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to, like, go to doctors and be like, no, I swear I think it's COVID. Like, I swear I think it's COVID. Even when I was, like, literally, like, I did not think I had COVID. But just to, like, get the PCR, because they will not give that shit to you now.
I mean, it's just wild to me because, like, there's so many, like, airborne and tactile born viruses going on that we're not taking care of any.
Mm-hmm.
And with the erasure of, like, departments as it is.
Yeah.
With.
And COVID tracking resources.
Yeah. You can't even look at the weather properly.
Right.
And I think that also people don't know that the big ugly bill also is targeting farming and the way that we access food. I've been, like, trying to dissect that into a more, like, palatable vernacular for the regular individual. But it's 1,100 pages. Yeah. So if anybody wants to volunteer to make me, I mean, I'm still decoding it.
Right.
Not even, like, translating it yet. But from what I've read, like, the farm, like, we're gonna have control over seeds and, like, what foods we grow and how much, and, like, it's so expensive.
Yeah.
So, like, in the next year, you probably won't be able to, like, get a loaf of bread. Like, if you think the eggs were expensive,
perfect.
Bread is gonna be, bread and rice are gonna be so expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm somebody who's, like, very prissy, but I love, like, growing things, but not really myself. I like be like, oh yeah, let's grow this together, but you do the work. But just, like, finding your local community garden, it's very important. But then they also gatekept by the system.
Mm-hmm.
They're always closed.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Yeah.
We have 1 minute left.
Oh wow!
I know, right? It goes by quick.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna. Do you have any last comments or anything you want to shout out before?
Yes, we're moving out of our studio by August 15th. If you have access to a car, hands, legs, and want to help us move, reach us through Instagram DMs or our website and blackbunnyborough.com or at blackbunnyborough on Instagram, and follow the people that we follow, because those are great collectives that are doing great work and our community.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and telling us all about this.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Moss Radio, and this has been DJ Croak and a member of Black Bunny Borough. So have a wonderful evening, everybody, night, and if you're driving, drive safe.